Exactly 2 years ago today, Russia launched a long-feared full-scale offensive to take control of Ukraine's east. That's the country's mostly Russian-speaking industrial heartland, where Moscow-backed separatists had been fighting Ukrainian forces for 8 years. Let's go to Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine, find out what the situation is today. And I found that hard to believe that fighting had gone on for 8 years, Joe.
Bob, indeed, a long time. Hello from Kyiv, and it's a rainy, sort of chilly day here today. I just went for a run in the rain. Calm here in Kyiv, but just a few minutes ago, the air raid alarms are sounding in Kharkiv, Sumy, and Chernihiv. And Chernihiv is that city that the Russians hit yesterday. The death toll from yesterday's attack there is at least 18. Maybe it seems at least 77 were injured. And the Russians tried to say that they were hitting among the targets that they hit yesterday. They destroyed a hospital and a hotel and residential places. And Russian propaganda says that they were targeting Ukrainian soldiers. And it's a very interesting trick that they use, because that ignores the fact that, you know, before February 24th, 2022, most people who are currently Ukrainian soldiers were civilians. You know, they didn't want to be soldiers. And the only reason why they are soldiers is because Russia invaded their country with a full-scale invasion in 2022. And so that, you know, the Russians try to say, oh, we're just attacking soldiers. Well, actually, it's really civilians. But this does, you know, bring up the point that this war in many ways has been going on since 2014. And that Ukrainians are always keen to emphasize that. Although when I talk with Ukrainians, I remind them, if Americans hear this war has been going on since 2014, that might wear them out a bit, just the idea of how long is this going on. But really, what happened in 2014, really, it started in 2013. In the fall of 2013, Ukrainians began to protest the movement of the Yanukovych government here in Kyiv toward Moscow. And there was a battle being fought. Does Ukraine, you know, get away from its Soviet past? Does it finally break truly free from the orbit of Moscow? And that's what the people wanted, or at least that's what a large number of people wanted. And so they protested in the streets, and then the secret police began to fire upon people, and that really awakened the nation, and it became this unstoppable momentum until February, when the regime of Yanukovych fled to Russia. And then the next weeks, it was a strange type of calm chaos. There was no functioning police throughout Ukraine, and yet there was no looting. The people maintained their society, and they sort of, you know, kept order in the wake of that revolution. But there was really no strong functioning military. And at that point, there was a leadership vacuum, you could say. And Russia seized the opportunity. That's when they took the Crimean Peninsula, where they already had a major naval base going back to the Soviet times. And then they sent Russian sort of provocateurs and separatists into Donetsk in eastern Ukraine, that very mineral-rich region of eastern Ukraine. And so once Ukraine sort of got its new government together during the spring and summer of 2014, fighting happened there pretty intensely. I mean, Russians tried to take the city of Mariupol, which they've now destroyed in 2022. But in 2014, they tried to take that city. They failed to do it. They tried to take Odessa. And for one 24-hour period, they almost seemed to have, it seems that they had control of Kharkiv City. And the people of Kharkiv resisted, even though they were Russian-speaking people. Many of them had relatives in Russia. And it was precisely that in the spring of 2014, with the fact that I knew what had happened in Kharkiv, that's what told me that Ukraine was not going to fall. In 2022, I saw the way the people of Kharkiv resisted, with barely a functioning military, just their whatever resources they could find. And they pushed the Russians out of their city. And what you saw happen from 2014 to 2022, many people left Russian the Donetsk region, which was controlled by Russian backed separatists. And they went to places like Kharkiv. And Kharkiv blossomed as a city during those 8 years of freedom and prosperity. And so this is everything that Russia is trying to erase now. In fact, the mayor of Kharkiv said yesterday that Putin and the Russians are trying to make Kharkiv into another Aleppo. They're nowhere close to doing that, but the frequency of the bombings on that city are indeed, they're trying to erase this story of freedom and prosperity that these Russian-speaking Ukrainians built in Kharkiv. And maybe the last score on this point, there was a major story published yesterday in Foreign Affairs magazine called "The Talks That Could Have Ended the War in Ukraine." It was written by two writers, and it's a story of the hidden history of diplomacy that during that spring of 2022, the negotiations between Ukraine and Russia. It's a fascinating piece, but there's one huge part of the story that is entirely missed, and that's the people. And even at some points in the story, it says, well, Zelensky was ready, allegedly, to make some concessions to Russia. But knowing the Ukrainian people, I can't imagine that the Ukrainians would have approved concessions, like giving up rights to their language and allowing Russian to be an equal language with Ukrainian, or giving up parts of their territory. And so that whole story misses the essence of what Ukraine is. It's not about the government. It's about the people. And looking at the history of 2014, it's kind of how we got here. That really shows that it is the people here who insist on being free. It's not about the government.
Coincidentally, as you're telling us about that, I'm looking at a text from one of our listeners that says, Bob, could you ask Joseph if he thinks there's anything Ukraine could have done to avoid this war? And I think that article points out a lot that could have been done.
Well, the article, yeah, it points out exactly the things that Ukrainians did not want to do. I mean, if Ukrainians had agreed never to join NATO, if they had refused to make Ukrainian their official language, if they had accepted, a sort of the Yanukovych regime, if they had given up their rights to protest in the streets, everything that Ukrainians refused to give up. So the reason why this war is happening is because of what Ukrainian people did in 2014. Mm-hmm. And had they not stayed in the streets, there would be no war now. And it's the same, we look at what happened in Hong Kong. You know, the people of Hong Kong from about 2015, 2016, 2017 up until 2020, they were protesting. They still had the right to protest in the streets. And they used the playbook of the Ukrainian protesters because they saw that it actually worked. And for 8 years, it did work. But then we see that during that time, Russia was preparing for this major assault. But I think the fundamental thing is, the only thing Ukraine could have done to prevent this is to surrender their freedom in the deepest sense. Like, you know, they would have to live like Belarus, which is, and Belarusians can elect their own government, but it has to be always a Putin-approved government.
Right. You know, we don't realize all of the ways we are all affected by this war. The Polish finance minister said this week that the war is a major threat to the global economy, and the war in Ukraine is impacting markets in several ways. And he singled out the agriculture markets too. And of course, you go to the grocery store, and we're paying more for everything there. And a lot of that comes from Ukraine and the situation there, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, and always with economics, it can be complicated. There's different ways to look at it. I mean, in many ways, the Polish economy has been strengthened with the influx of, Ukrainians coming into Polish society to work. There's a lot of evidence of that. Ukraine is now exporting almost as much as it was grain-wise as they were before the full-scale invasion. So there's positive side of the story. But as we see, the uncertainty and the worries about gas prices and Ukrainian attacks on Russian oil facilities, all of these things can affect the economy. But then there's a basic question of, how can you invest and plan if there's always, if there's a threat that your country could be attacked by Russia? And so that the uncertainty of the war. And this has been we haven't really talked about it much, but it's been a big debate in Polish society. There's been, often blockades of the Ukrainian border. And I think that is something we do need to pay more attention to, because these are the ripple effects, some of it inflamed by Russia, but some of it just the natural frustrations of people trying to survive, as you see in America during challenging times.
The uncertainty is the only thing that's certain. Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine, thank you as always, Joe, and hey, we wish for peace. Talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Bob. Until tomorrow.